This is episode number 185 with Rory Vaden.
New concepts and ideas to help you reach your full potential. Reach your full potential. Reach your full potential. Small win, small win, small win. Keep your momentum going.
The Success 101 Podcast.
Welcome to the Success 101 Podcast. This is your host, Jared Warren, and each episode, my goal is to bring you a new concept or idea to help you maximize your full potential. Thanks for joining me here today. Now let's kick things off. Hey guys, welcome back to the Success 101 Podcast. I am so fired up you're here with me this week. As always, this is your host, Jared Warren, and this is my favorite time of year as we roll through fall, approaching winter, and into the holidays. We have so much to be thankful for, so much to be grateful for, and I can't wait to hear what some of you guys are going to do to end 2017 and attack 2018 to accomplish so much like you never have before. If you guys haven't checked out my coaching programs yet, I wanted to send out a reminder that you can head to success101podcast.com/coaching to check out the four modules that I have there. Also, if you haven't had a chance to get your hands on my book yet, you can head over to success101podcast.com/book. And if you're in the United States, my team has made that so easy for you guys to grab the paperback version for just the shipping cost. Make sure you put success101 in the promo or coupon code to get it for just the shipping cost. And if you're international outside the United States, you can grab the ebook reader for about the same cost. My team has made that easy to get into your hands. The feedback on that has been awesome, and I can't wait for more of you to grab your own copy. Also, if you guys haven't checked out Ample, A-M-P-L-E, and the incredible meal replacement drink the good people over at Ample have come up with, you are missing out. It's soy-free, gluten-free, non-GMO, no artificial sweeteners, no artificial flavors. And check out the nutritional profile on this stuff, guys. It's got healthy fats, MCTs, omega-3 fatty acids for fueling your brain and body with energy and controlling inflammation. It's got quality proteins like BCAAs and grass-fed collagen protein to support joint health. It's got clean carbohydrates with a low glycemic impact. That's so important for your carbohydrates to be clean burning for your body and mind. It's got fiber and prebiotics. It's got probiotics. It's got plant-based micronutrients and a ton of other awesome ingredients that you're not going to be able to find at your local supermarket or, in most cases, online. They've come up with an awesome product, and I cannot wait for you guys to get your hands on it. Just head to success101podcast.com/ample, that's A-M-P-L-E, and at checkout, be sure to put success101 in the promo or coupon code to snag 15% off of your 400 or 600 calorie bottle. Ample made a huge believer out of me long ago, and I love this new product they've created. Now, guys, on to our awesome show today with Rory Vaden. I've learned so much from Rory over the years, so it was an honor to be able to interview him on the podcast. We're going to talk about a ton of things, including prioritizing, efficiency, how to handle burnout, what significance really is, how to multiply time. Yes, there really is such a thing as multiplying your time. He'll tell you today exactly how to do that. The problems with procrastinating and why sometimes you should procrastinate on purpose and why sometimes procrastination just amplifies all of your pain. Also, if you get a chance, head to YouTube and check out Rory's TED Talk on multiplying time and procrastinating on purpose. That was really my intro to Rory a couple of years back, which really changed the way I frame time and time organization. I look forward to you guys hearing that as well. Again, guys, this was an awesome episode. I loved having Rory on. So without any further delay, let's jump right to my conversation with Rory Vaden. Hey, guys, welcome back to the Success 101 Podcast. I'm so honored to have Rory Vaden here on the podcast with us here today. Rory, how's it going?
Oh, Jared, I'm doing great, brother. Thank you for having me.
Well, I know it's been a long time coming to get us together here, and I'm so thankful to have you on because your message, I think, is going to speak to our listeners so much. You know, the Success 101 Podcast really framed around peak performance. And when I read into your work, man, that is exactly where I see that message going. But a lot of it really kind of flies in the face of conventional wisdom today, or at least wisdom in the way that we're taught. And really the fact that everything, what you say is everything we know about time management might be wrong, and that we're really being taught this message out there in the culture.
that successful people think a certain way. And I think your work speaks to it a little bit differently, especially in your book, Procrastinate on Purpose. Can you frame that for us just a little bit as we go ahead and dive in here as to why we're being sent a message in culture today, but people, even older people who have lived a long time trying to go down this path of quote unquote success, why they are finding out that, hey, this might just not be the right way to go as we frame time management, productivity, success, all of those things you talk about?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, for us, it's rooted in what we do every day. And so, you know, my daily life is actually the co-founder of Southwestern Consulting. And a lot of people think of me as a speaker and a blogger and a podcaster myself and an author, but really we do one-on-one coaching, primarily sales coaching and sales leadership coaching. And so we're coaching all these people, Jared. We've had about 8,000 clients, and we do these intake forms when people come in as to what's the number one thing they're struggling with. And the number one thing people say they're struggling with is time management. And that sort of hit me as like, wow, that's fascinating, because how is it that we know more about time management than ever before in history? Like, there's more books written on it than ever before. And how is it that we have more tools and technology than ever before? You know, we carry around these miniature computers in our pockets, and there's all of these apps, and there's all sorts of calendar systems. And theoretically, we know more about time management than ever before in history, and yet over 70% of people are still saying that that is the number one thing they struggle with. And so we started to dive into it, not really out of passion so much, but as much of trying to, other than trying to help our clients. And what we discovered is there is a new type of thinker that has emerged as it relates to thinking about time, which is somebody that we refer to as a multiplier. And in order to sort of understand, there's two major differences in how multipliers think different from everybody else. And I want to talk about the first one, which is huge. And in order to do that, I'm going to take you on a quick history here of time management theory. So early time management thought really developed in the late 50s and 60s. So if you think about what's happening in the world there, that's coming, you know, we're coming off of out of the Great Depression, the World Wars, and it was all very one-dimensional. And the thought was to manage our time by doing things efficiently. It was all about developing tips and tricks and tools and technology to help us do things faster. And that is kind of what is happening in the day. Well, all things being equal, efficiency is a good idea. It's better to be, if we don't compromise quality, then faster is better. But the problem with the efficiency strategy as it relates to your time is that ultimately efficiency reaches this point of diminishing returns, which is very well evidenced by the fact that we do all carry around these cell phones in our pockets, and we do have more technology than ever before, and yet people are still feeling behind. That's because today there's more to do than we can ever get to. So it doesn't mean that you shouldn't move fast. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't move with a sense of urgency. It just means that speed cannot be your only strategy, because it'll max out. One of my favorite questions, you know, at Southwestern Consulting, a couple times a year, we usually will commission a national study, and we look at data on things like accountability and New Year's resolutions and sales trends and stuff like that. And one of the polling questions we asked, which was, how many of you, you know, use your cell phone regularly while in the public restroom, you know, like while right. in the restroom? And over 90% of people admit to checking email and using their phone while in the restroom. What could be more efficient than that?
Sure, absolutely. That's one of my favorite places to check it.
Right? I mean, and you're in a moment, you're maximizing every second, you're doing two things at once. Sometimes three, right? Right. Depending. And you're going efficient. So many of us, if you're even listening to this podcast, chances are you're an efficient person. Like you probably wouldn't even be in the audience of, if you wouldn't even be interested in personal growth, unless you were already focused on doing things efficient. Well, a couple decades later, a new era of time management thought emerged. And we really pay tribute here to the late, great, brilliant Dr. Stephen Covey. Dr. Covey wrote a book, I'm sure you've heard of it, Seven Habits Absolutely. Of Highly Effective People, sold 25, 25 million copies. We actually have the same literary agent. And, you know, when Dr. Covey wrote that book, it changed the way the world thought about time. And it's really one of the most copyright infringed upon books and pieces, body of knowledge, is this thing he presented called the time management matrix. And Dr. Covey took us from era one thinking to era two thinking, or what we sometimes refer to as two-dimensional time management thinking. And what he did is he created this chart, you've probably seen it before, where the y-axis is importance and the x-axis is urgency. And what the big distinction that Dr. Covey taught us was that not all time is created, or not all tasks are created equal. In other words, he took us from an era of managing time by doing things efficiently to prioritizing time. And the word prioritizing is means to focus first on what matters most. And this little chart he gave us a way to sort of measure how important is it and how urgent is it. And there's this natural separation, these four distinct quadrants. And ever since that time, I really feel like, and he's not the only one that talked about those concepts, but he was the one that really made it pervasive. We have lived in a world where prioritizing has become the dominant strategy. And people throw that word around, right, Jared? Like, oh, you know, you just need to get your priorities in order, or she's just not good at prioritizing, or, you have to get clear on what your priorities are. Well, it's not that prioritizing is bad at all. In fact, prioritizing is more useful as a skill today than ever before. But what we realized is that there is a limitation to prioritizing, using prioritizing as your predominant strategy also, which is that there is nothing about prioritizing that creates more time. What prioritizing teaches you to do is take item number 7 on your to-do list and bump it up to number 1 to focus first and put that in front of all others. But it doesn't create more time, and it doesn't help you accomplish any of the other tasks. All it does is it's more like borrowing time. You're borrowing time from some other set of activities to align and focus on this one, which is a valuable skill. But that is why no matter how good you are at prioritizing, it will still feel like you're never caught up. I mean, being efficient is kind of like running on a treadmill, right? And so you're running faster and faster. Prioritizing is like juggling. In fact, you hear people say, oh, I'm juggling a lot. That's kind of like juggling. And if you get really good at prioritizing, you're able to juggle a lot of balls. If you're really efficient, you're able to run really fast on a treadmill. If you're able to do both, you're able to run really fast while you're juggling a lot of balls. But even if you think about that, all we are, if all you do is try to run faster or juggle more, eventually you are headed towards an inevitable crash landing. And I'm sure that your advisors and your clients and your listeners, and one of the things I love about you, Jared, is that you're an actual real life leader every day. I think that's so important, you know, for all of your listeners. It's such a benefit to them that you are leading, you know, as a managing director, you know, 50 people every single day. And I think that's so valuable. And I'm sure you see this with them where they burn out or they crash or they plateau. Well, so that is, and here's part of the thing to think about.
And Rory, not to cut you off there, but I feel like, and this could be maybe a false assessment, I'm not sure. You see a lot more people and lead a lot more people than I have in my lifetime. But I think with the new generation, not to knock on the millennials here or anything like that, I know they get knocked on enough for their, you know, their characteristics and how they work and things like that that are different from other generations. But I think I'm seeing this burnout, quote unquote, it's happening faster. It's happening at younger ages. Whenever I hit my rock bottom that really led to the podcast and really trying to get people's knowledge around how we can be better every day, I started really looking around. It's like the red car, right? You buy a red car and then everybody has a red car. What's happening around you, you just don't notice it until you go through it yourself, because then you can identify it. But what I started taking inventory of was just that earlier generations, it just seems like they're rock hard, you know, tough, our grandparents, parents' generations. And then you get into my generation, and then maybe the one even that are coming below us, it's almost like this burnout is happening faster. I don't know if you can speak to that any in your research or what you're finding, but is it just that we're giving into it at earlier ages and just going, hey, this is what it is. Everybody's burnt out and I'm 20 something years old. Now I'm burnt out. Or is there something that's contributing to that?
Well, it's interesting. Nobody's ever asked me that question about the millennial part, Jared, but I think you make a really good point. And I'm actually close buddies and just had on my podcast the world's leading researcher on millennials. His name's Jason Dorsey, and he runs this Center for Generational Kinetics. And you know, they're major, always featured in major media. And so I was interviewing him about millennials. And so it's fresh on my mind because it was like a week ago. And one of the things I think that is true is I think millennials do sort of burn out in faster in this sort of traditional, like, just pay your dues, you know, just work harder, be more efficient, like juggle more. They do seem to maybe. But one of the things about millennials is that they're incredibly smart. Sometimes I think they could use a little more discipline. And these are broad sweeping generalizations. I actually found out that I am a millennial, which was sort of shocking to me. I was like, whoa, holy crap. Like, I'm the take the stairs guy talking about discipline and paying the price. And I'm like, I am a millennial. So you can't say all millennials are a certain way. I mean, my whole personal, you know, brand and mission, I mean, it's all part of Southwestern Consulting, but, you know, my specific area of expertise is overcoming procrastination and taking action and discipline. And here I am, a millennial out there, you know, one of the world's loudest mouths championing those things. But I think this is important, and you bring up a good, an important part is that the world is evolving. Millennials are a huge part of that. And I think they contribute a lot to this new type of thinking. And here's something to realize that makes the point. Do you know what year the book Seven Habits of Highly Effective People was first published?
I'm looking at it on my shelf right now, but I couldn't tell you the year. Is it in the, I don't know. Was it in the 70s?
80s. It's in the 80s. Okay. 1989. I believe it was 1989 or maybe 1987. So now that book is, everybody should read the book. It's a perennial bestseller, right? Like it's amazing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But here's a separate question. Think about to yourself, what are some things that exist in the world today that did not even exist yet in the year 1989 when that book was first published and all that research came out? Like, what are some of the tools that we use that literally did not even exist in the year 1989?
Well, the big ones, iPhone, internet.
Social media. Google.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, you barely had email in the late 80s. And so you can't solve today's time management problems using yesterday's time management strategies. And so it's not that bad at all, but it's kind of an example of, you know, what Marshall Goldsmith said, you know, it's a case of what got you here won't get you there. So it gets you to a certain point, but at a certain point you sort of max out. And that's what we see our clients doing. Like most of the people in coaching with us, they're not brand new, very beginning. They're usually very, you know, they're successful or seasoned people. And they're trying to break through to the next level. They're trying to kind of create some type of exponential growth. So they're very, very smart. Well, what we started to notice as we then went out and started to try to answer this question, how do the top 1%ers think? We noticed that this new thinker, these people we now call multipliers, it's not that they didn't do and think in some of the ways that traditionally we've thought of, but it's that they have added to it. And they have made a third calculation, which for them was unconscious. And so really all we did was identify it and bring it into the conscious, which is while most people make decisions on which tasks to spend their time on based on importance and urgency, multipliers have evolved to make a third calculation, which is the calculation of significance. And here's the difference. Importance is how much does something matter. So if it costs a lot of money, it's very important. If it affects somebody you love, it's very important, right? Urgency is how soon does it matter. But significance is different. Significance is not how much does it matter or how soon does it matter. Significance is how long is this going to matter? In other words, how is this going to matter over time? And so what multipliers do is they get outside of one day. See, most people wake up and they ask themselves the question, what's the most important thing I could do today? But that's not how multipliers think. Multipliers wake up and they ask themselves the question, how can I use my time in a way today that is going to make tomorrow better? how can I use my time right now that makes tomorrow easier, faster, produces more results, etc. And the way that they multiply time. So this is a third calculation. And so this brings us to what we call era three time management thinking, which is adding significance, which would, you know, for those of you that are algebra, you still remember algebra, it would be the Z axis. So you have a Y axis, an X axis, and a Z axis, which would take a square and make it into a cube, which is the significance calculation. And so you say, well, This is how it's possible to multiply time. And Jared, you might go, okay, like, how could you multiply time? And people ask me that. They say, that is, Rory, are you exaggerating? That sounds like some type of superlative. Like, there's no way you can multiply time. Well, it's not a superlative. It's not an exaggeration. We mean this empirically. We mean this like that you can actually create more time. But it is true, there's nothing you can do to create more time inside of one day. We all have the same 24 hours, which is 1,440 minutes or 86,400 seconds. But that's exactly the problem. Most of us only think in the paradigm of one day. Multipliers break outside of that and they think about tomorrow and the next day and the next day. So the way that you multiply time in one sentence, and you may want to write this down or pull over in your car and like capture this. You multiply time by giving yourself the emotional permission to spend time on things today that create more time tomorrow. You multiply time by giving yourself the emotional permission to spend time on things today that create more time tomorrow. So you multiply time by giving yourself the emotional permission to spend time on things today that give you more time tomorrow. Now, you remember, Jared, earlier I said there's two major differences in how multipliers think. The second way they think, I actually told you the second one first, so we're going to like, you know, Quentin Tarantino, everybody and go right backwards. So the significance calculation is the second major difference, and probably the biggest difference, or, you know, the most substantial difference is thinking in terms of significance, thinking in terms of tomorrow and the next day and the next day. And the significance calculation changes everything because it completely reevaluates what you define as the next most, you know, the next most deserving thing of your time and attention. But the second difference, well, it's really the first one, but I'll explain it here second, is that word emotional. See, And this one was funny because we didn't discover this difference. We didn't uncover this realization from any of our coaching clients or from any national studies or statistical sampling or reading academic journals or any of that stuff. The way that we stumbled onto this other difference was actually I was at my business partner's house. One of my business partners, Dustin Hillis, is the he's one of the other co-founders of Southwestern Consulting. In fact, Steve Reiner, that I think you came across, Jared, Steve and Dustin wrote a book together recently. And so, you know, obviously all three of us are business partners. But I was at Dustin's house and I was over there and we had our international leaders planning retreat. And it was a Saturday morning. And Dustin at the time had this little like three-year-old, she was about 3 years old, little three-year-old baby girl named Haven. And we were trying to sneak out of the house before Haven woke up. And so we go over there and Dustin and I are leaving and Haven comes sprinting down the hallway and she like leaps and she grabs a hold of Dustin's leg and she says, "Daddy, where are we going?" And Dustin looks at her and he says, "Oh, I'm sorry, baby Haven. Daddy has to actually go to work today." And her little eyes well up with tears. And she says, "No, Daddy, please no work today. Please no work, Dad." And in that moment, Jared, I realized two things. The first is that I'm not ready for children quite just yet. now, like I said, that was a couple of years ago. And as it turns out, incidentally, I have a four-month-old in the room right next door, next to me. So AJ and I, we had our first son a couple months ago, which has been awesome. And we're loving it. But actually, when I was looking at Haven, the big sort of epiphany that I had from her was that everything I had ever learned about time management was all about tips and tricks, tools and technology, apps, calendars, checklists, ways of organizing things. In other words, everything that I had ever learned about time management was all logical. But in that moment, watching her interface with Dustin, it occurred to me that today time management isn't just logical. It's emotional. And our feelings of guilt and fear and worry and anxiety, those things end up dictating what we actually spend our time doing as much as anything that is on our calendar or in our inbox or on our to-do list. And that is where the conflict happens, is that I would be willing to bet that plenty of people listening have either read Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, or they've seen someone steal Dr. Covey's time management matrix and teach it, or that they have been through getting things done and talking about the systems of organizing it, right? And David Allen has this, you know, this very ornate and well thought out structure for, you know, if you're a logical mind of like keeping everything detailed and organized. But I bet nobody has read one book or ever taken one class on managing the emotionals side of time management. And humans aren't logical. Humans are emotional. And when we have emotions driving us, then we end up actually doing things that are different from what we think we maybe should do. And so where Procrastinate on Purpose, so the book's called Procrastinate on Purpose, Five Permissions to Multiply Your Time, which is actually our second book. Take the Stairs was the first one that I mentioned earlier. Where the book comes into play is that it talks about the emotional side of time management. And so coming back to how do you multiply time in one sentence, you multiply time by giving yourself the emotional permission to spend time on things that give you more, to spend time on things today that give you more time tomorrow. You have to have that emotional permission because you're going to be sacrificing some amount of urgency in the short term as a way of investing into the long term. And so the whole premise of the book, there's also a TED Talk, of course, which you can go see. The TED Talk's called How to Multiply Time. It's all
which is great, guys. For those of you guys listening in, I'll link it up in the show notes. But that was really my first introduction to you, Rory. And I was like, holy cow, like this is so, you know, some things you hear out there and you're like, all right, who's this guy? You know, I've been taught something my whole life and this guy's trying to change it. Good luck. When I heard yours, I was like, oh my gosh, it makes so much sense. You know, but it's so different than what we've been taught this entire time. It's just, it was amazing.
Well, thank you. I you know, that's just the work of our team and our clients and spending a lot of time, you know, thinking about it and trying to figure it out. Because yeah, like everything we're saying, it's not like it's, in some ways, it's very earth-shattering. In some ways, it's like, holy moly, like I've never thought of this is a complete, but in other ways, it's like, oh yeah, that kind of makes sense. It's kind of intuitive. But that's a key thing to know too, right? And I know you were influenced by Zig Ziglar, who was one of my personal mentors and close friends. And you know, the next level of results always requires the next level of thinking. Like I said earlier, you can't solve today's time management challenges using yesterday's time management solutions. And so the premise of the book, the TED Talk, you know, everything around multiplying time can be summed up in one simple sentence. You multiply time by giving yourself the emotional permission to spend time on things today that give you more time tomorrow. So then what we had to do is we had the challenge of going, okay, how do we take that concept and how do we make it become practical and actionable? And how do we teach it to our coaching clients who many of them are like you, Jared? They're people who have teams of 50 people and we, you know, they're managing a sales force or they're a small business owner or they have a real job every day where they're going super fast. They have they get over 100 emails on average every day. And they're going, okay, how do we take that concept and put it into practice? And that's where we created the Focus Funnel, which is our attempt to really take this concept and make it like, okay, how do I live this multiply time thing?
Right. And I want to take a little bit of a step back here, maybe for the listeners who possibly haven't read your work, and give them just a little bit of a framework for all of this wisdom you're sending our way and maybe changing people's minds on this, hopefully. I know in your writing, you say that we can choose one of three options. And you've alluded to this a little bit, but let's break these down. Number one, we can manage our time. Number two, we can prioritize our time. As you mentioned, number three, we can multiply our time. And you say we're the most successful among us. Really, what they're doing is learning how to multiply their time. What if somebody tries to step up to the plate or step up to the mound and throw you a curveball and say, okay, Rory, I hear what you're saying. Kind of makes sense to me, but gosh, I'm really successful. I've been successful my whole life and I'm way older than you. And I do really well, I think, at managing time or prioritizing time. Not to say that they're completely wrong, but why would you say, okay, here's why you would have been way better by multiplying your time? Because I know there's probably out there, people probably out there, and I hear them that say, oh, I'm great at managing my time, which really equates to being organized, right? Or I'm great at prioritizing my time, which really equates to being organized many times. What would you say to that?
Well, I appreciate the challenge question there, Jared. You didn't prepare me for that, but that's good. Here's what occurs to me as you ask that question, and I'm just thinking off the cuff here. Chances are, like I said, if you're listening to this podcast, you're already very successful because by definition, you have self-selected into an audience of people who are interested in personal development and growth, which is one of the characteristics of the most successful people. You wouldn't become successful without being good at managing your time. The way I think about your question is it's kind of like if somebody saved money their entire life, by the time they were 40 or 50 or 60, they would probably be a 100,000-aire, maybe even a millionaire. And they would go, well, I know a lot about money because I have money, right? And that is money. That's legit money. Like you're a millionaire. That's legit money. But a multiplier would be somebody who learned how to invest money. And it's not to say there's anything wrong with being a 100,000-aire or a millionaire, but a multiplier is somebody who would have taken that million and they turned it into 50 million and they did it in the same amount of time. In fact, because you've read the book, the way that rich people think about money is exactly the same way that multipliers think about time. And I think that's part of why Procrastinate on Purpose isn't actually the sequel to Take the Stairs. It's really the prequel to Take the Stairs. So I wrote them kind of in reverse order, but part of the reason why is because I didn't understand how rich people thought until I got older and I learned about investing and things like that. And I had to sort of deconstruct and figure that out. And once I figured out how rich people think about money, that helped me start to have some of these realizations about time. But I think it's not to say you're not successful, just like you wouldn't say somebody who's a millionaire, you wouldn't say, oh, you're not rich. Well, you are rich. But it is to say there's a whole nother level here. There's a whole nother stratosphere. And people who become millionaires, they typically are in one of two categories. They typically are in the category where they go, you know, I'm cool where I'm at. Like, I'm just like, you know, trudging along and that's fine. Or they're going, how do I go from being a millionaire to being a 50 million or 100 million? And when you talk about creating stratospheric exponential results, the next level of results always requires the next level of thinking. It would be equivalent of teaching somebody how to go from, you know, if it's making money, it's almost like there's three steps. The first step is you have to teach them how to stop freaking spending money, how to get out of debt. Like you have to stop freaking spending money and manage your expenses. Then step two, you know, or a related step is like, okay, now you have to be able to save money. You have to be disciplined about storing that money and not touching it. And then step three is, now you need to have to learn how to invest money. I think that's kind of more the parallel of how I think about your question.
I mean, that's awesome. I know I threw a curveball there, but awesome answer and makes a lot of sense. When we're talking about this emotional, you know, the significance part, giving yourself permission for the emotional, people, I'll just frame it this way. People, when it comes, you know, the emotional part of it, we'll keep peeling back the layers on, but people know what they need to do. I know you experience this in life in general with maybe your own family or friends, but probably more so even with the coaching where you're seeing people's behaviors and patterns and you're trying to reframe that or shift that for them. I see the same thing here coaching these advisors. People know what they need to do. Mature, smart, grown-up adults, whatever you want. We're not children anymore. But you talk a lot about falling in love with the daily grind, which kind of seems like, you know, a unicorn or what. It's like how people probably hear that and go, yeah, right. Like fall in love with the daily grind. How do I really do that? How do I gear myself up for that and not just be faking it? But as simple as sometimes for those of us who have kind of pushed through that, and we know how to do that, as simple as it sounds, my question to you would be, why do people struggle with doing what they know they need to do? And maybe even piggyback off that a little bit into your concept of the rent axiom. I love your writing on that. But why do people not do what they know they need to do? They verbally can admit it. They know it deep down. They're not doing it. And why is success never owned? That rent axiom you talk about.
Yeah. So you're actually now moving us more into more of the conversation of Take the Stairs. And they're very closely related. And you know, what you're asking about here, Jared, is really the pinpoint is like, because you know, when I said earlier, Procrastinating on Purpose isn't the sequel to Take the Stairs, it's more of the prequel. Because what the Procrastinating on Purpose and the focus funnel, which is the core methodology of it. If you go to procrastinateonpurpose.com, you can, there's a free 1 hour training where I walk you through the entire focus funnel, and you can sort of like, it'll explain it in more detail. So they'll get the full explanation if they want to go to there. But I love you kind of going to this question, because if POP, we call it POP for short, procrastinate on purpose. If POP is all about helping you identifying what you should do, right? The thing that will multiply your time. Then when you get down to the bottom of the focus funnel and you have actually identified the next most significant priority, the thing that will multiply your time, you still are stuck with the question, how do I get myself to do the thing I know I should be doing when I don't feel like doing it, which is what Take the Stairs is all about. It's all about the psychology of self-discipline and overcoming procrastination. So to answer your question, why don't we do it? Well, or how do we get ourselves to do those things? There's actually 7 key distinctions that ultra performers make in terms of the way they think differently that enables them to do the things they know they should do when they don't feel like doing it versus average people who just procrastinate on things they know they should do. And I'm going to give you the fundamental one, which is called the pain paradox. And it's the paradox principle of sacrifice. I think it's the first of the 7 or maybe the 2nd in the actual Take the Stairs book. Let me, again, I'm going to tell you kind of a little story. I think it'll resonate better. So in Colorado, Jared, where I grew up, I live in Nashville now with my business partners and then with my wife, AJ, who is also one of the founding partners of Southwestern Consulting. And so we live in Nashville, but I grew up in Colorado. We are famous for the Rocky Mountains. And when most people think of Colorado, they think of the Rocky Mountains. What a lot of people don't realize is that as a state, Colorado is divided almost exactly in half. And to the eastern part of the state are the Great Kansas Plains. Well, because of that unique topographical landscape, Colorado is one of the only places in the world that has both buffalo and cows. And there is a great lesson, Jared, for people to learn from studying the way that these two creatures respond to storms. So when storms come, storms almost always brew from the west. And then what happens is they roll out towards the east. And what cows do is very natural. A cow can sense that a storm is coming from the west. And so the cows will try to run east, or they won't try. They will run east, and they will try to outrun the storm. The only problem with that is that if you know anything about cows, you know they're not real fast. So as the cows run east, the storm catches up with them rather quickly. Well, without knowing any better, the cows continue to try to outrun the storm. But instead of outrunning the storm, they actually run with the storm, maximizing the amount of pain and time and frustration they experience from that storm, which is so stupid. It's so stupid. And the key insight here that the ultra performers have made that most of the rest of us have not yet is multipliers and ultra performers. We now use those terms interchangeably. We used to call them ultra performers and Take the Stairs, and now we call multipliers. But the key insight that those ultra performers have made that most of us have not is this. They realize problems that are procrastinated on are always amplified. Problems that are procrastinated on are amplified. Waiting always makes it worse. What buffalo do is very unique in the animal kingdom. So buffalo wait for the storm to cross right over the crest of the peak of the mountaintop. And as the storm rolls over the ridge, buffalo turn, and instead of running east away from the storm, buffalo turn west and they charge directly at the storm. They run at the storm. They run into the storm. And by running into the storm, they run straight through it, which minimizes the amount of pain and time and frustration that we experience from that storm. Now, notice how it's the exact same storm. I think it's such a great metaphor for all of us, no matter what business you're in, because we all have storms. We're trying to get new customers. We're trying to manage cash flow. We're trying to scale the business. We're trying to hire and retain good people. We're trying to have good client retention and good customer service. And even in our personal life, right? We have financial struggles and health battles and relationship issues. So we don't get to decide whether or not we have storms. The only choice that we get to choose is how we respond to those storms. And more specifically, when we respond to those storms. And the great paradox here is what seems like the easy choice in life. eating whatever we want, saying whatever we want, doing whatever feels good in the short term, is the vehicle to the much more difficult life. So the pain paradox, simply stated, is this. Easy short-term choices lead to difficult long-term consequences. Meanwhile, difficult short-term choices lead to easy long-term consequences. So the great paradox is what feels easy, what seems like and feels good in the short term, is those things are the very vehicles that lead to the more difficult life later on. And inversely, the things that seem hard, the things that seem difficult, the things that seem like sacrifices, they're not sacrifices. They're short-term down payments on these rich future blessings, and they are the vehicles to the easier life later on. Another way of thinking about this is that procrastination and indulgence are really nothing more than creditors that charge you interest. So we always pay a price. We either pay that price now today, or we pay it later with interest. Now, here's part of where the two books tie together and what is what really the answer to your question. You say, why do people have a hard time doing the things they know they should be doing even when they don't feel like doing them? And it's very simple. It's because they have a short-term perspective instead of a long-term perspective. It's because absent an intentional choice to base your life on significance, you automatically, unconsciously, inadvertently make decisions based on urgency. Absence the significance calculation, we always make decisions on a world of urgency. So we always make decisions on what is good here and now, and we ignore the long term, the significance calculation. And so that is why, and part of it, I know you're big into neuroscience, Jared, like I know you're like big into it, right? So let's connect this, you know, to the neuroscience. The human brain is not programmed for success. The human brain is programmed for survival. Surviving is all about conserving energy. So your brain defaults to governing you in a way that helps you conserve energy. Well, forming new habits requires an expense of energy, and we don't like to do that. So that is why the brain is working against us. Naturally, it takes a level of intention to form a new habit. And the neuroscience of it is to form a new neural pathway. Every time you make a new decision, it literally is forming a new pathway in your brain, a new connection of a different set of neurons, very similar to forming a new path, like a new hiking trail in the woods. The first time you were going to form a new path, it would be the hardest. You have to knock down trees and move rocks and build bridges over lakes because there's not a path there. But once the path is established, it gets easier and easier, and the path becomes more and more clear. Well, it takes energy to create new habits. Also, when it comes to time management, one of the things that we know, if you watch a brain under brain scan, this is crazy. We know that dopamine, okay, there's a pleasure releasing, you know, the pleasure drug that makes us feel good. When you cross an item off your checklist or your to-do list or you delete an email out of your inbox, we get a little hit of dopamine. It makes us feel good. So it makes us feel like we're productive when we complete a bunch of stupid, trivial, insignificant things. Our brain is going, hey, good job. Right. Because, and you know this is true if you've ever completed a task that wasn't on your to-do list and then you added it to your to-do list just so you could cross it off, right? Why do you do that? Because you get the hit of dopamine. It makes you feel successful. Again, that's an emotional thing. It's not just logical. It's emotional. It's giving yourself the emotional permission to let go of that addiction of completing insignificant things and instead focusing on the trivial. And man, so you can see, you know, I know we're just getting going and I knew this would go by fast. And so here we are.
That's the problem with podcasts. You can get a lot done, but seems like with this kind of stuff, I mean, you could just go on and on. I know we've got just a couple of minutes here, so hopefully this isn't an impossible question. But back to that point, we've talked a lot about significance. We've talked a lot about emotion, how we make decisions and we prioritize or not prioritize, but we, you know, decision-making a lot of times is just based on emotion. Does our brain really care if we're successful? I mean, so many times in the neurology world, it talks about your brain being set up primarily for survival, you know, fight or flight and, you know, the different thing, different regions of the brain and all those sort of things. I would think that our brain, you know, this, I know this is a really weird question, so just bear with me, but I would think our brain does care otherwise we wouldn't, you know, we wouldn't feel so good about accomplishment and competition and thriving and all those sort of things. But as you just mentioned, sometimes that dopamine's released and it's like, why are we doing this? So maybe our brain doesn't really care about success as much as we think it does, and it's just getting in our way many times, and we have to train it, I would think.
No, I think your brain doesn't care at all about you being successful. I think your brain cares about feeling good.
Right.
And sometimes you can feel good from alcohol. You can feel good from drugs. You can also feel good from success and accomplishment and, you know, and giving and service. Your brain cares about feeling good, and your brain cares about conserving energy. It's an organism that's designed to help you survive.
Right, right.
You have to train your brain that the way you feel good is by being successful and not by drugs, right? Like you have to train it to do that. You have to be intentional. You have to form habits. You have to sort of take the stairs. And you know, I know I already mentioned, and I would encourage people, you know, go check out procrastinateonpurpose.com if you want to see more about the focus funnel and multiplying time. Or you could go to roryvadenblog.com, and there is where we have, like, you know, my podcast, and, you know, we write articles and stuff. And, you know, so there's a lot of free stuff that we're putting out there if people want to learn more.
Yeah, you've mentioned those two sites. Anywhere else that we can steer traffic more your way to learn about the work that you're doing and the things that you're doing?
No, that's it. Now, normally, I would just say roryvadenblog.com. That's our central hub for everything. But since this was a very focused conversation around the focus funnel, and we didn't really get to the focus funnel, if you go to procrastinateonpurpose.com, you can check that out. But you know, Jared, I want to say thank you for what you do and the work you're doing in the world, both in your other job, you know, and what the value you're providing, you know, to your listeners here. And then the last thing I would just leave everybody with is, as you mentioned, the rent axiom from Southwestern. And we love to say, no matter who you are, just remember that success is never owned. Success is only rented, and the rent is due every day.
And we need to be reminded of that often, including the three dimensions of time: managing, prioritizing, and multiplying. That's so great. Rory, thanks so much for your time here. We're honored to have you on. I know my listeners are going to get a ton out of this. I'll link everything up in show notes for you guys. And thanks so much for being here with us today.
My pleasure, Jared. Thanks for having me.
If you'd like to connect directly with me, the best way to do that is to shoot an email to my team at info@success101podcast.com, or you can catch me in the world of social media on the Success 101 Podcast Facebook community page or on Instagram under the name @Success101Podcast. I'll catch you guys on the next awesome episode. Until then.